Chapter 4. Of visiting those venerable relics? I would have you keep eternal guard over them, knowing no one to whose care they may more fittingly be entrusted. By this the image was brought close to the wooden slab that covered the entrance to the crypt, when the Duchess, springing forward, placed herself in the way. Sir, let the statue be put in place tomorrow, and suffer me, tonight, to say a last prayer beside those holy bones. The Duke stepped instantly to her side. Well thought, madam. I will go down with you now, and we will pray together. Sir, your long absences have, alas, given me the habit of solitary devotion, and I confess that any presence is distracting. Madam, I accept your rebuke. Hitherto, it is true, the duties of my station have constrained me to long absences, but henceforward I remain with you while you live. Shall we go down into the crypt together? No, for I fear for your excellencies again. The air there is excessively damp. The more reason you should no longer be exposed to it, and to prevent the intemperance of your zeal I will at once make the place inaccessible. The Duchess at this fell on her knees on the slab, weeping excessively and lifting her hands to heaven. She cried, you are cruel, sir, to deprive me of access to the sacred relics that have enabled me to support with resignation the solitude to which your excellency's duties have condemned me, and if prayer and meditation give me any authority to pronounce on such matters, suffer me to warn you, sir, that I fear the blessed Saint Blandina will punish us for thus abandoning her venerable remains. The Duke at this seemed to pause, for he was a pious man, and my grandmother thought she saw him exchange a glance with the chaplain, who, stepping timidly forward, with his eyes on the ground, said, there is indeed much wisdom in Her Excellency's words, but I would suggest, sir, that her pious wish might be met, and the saint more conspicuously honored, by transferring the relics from the crypt to a place beneath the altar. True, cried the Duke, and it shall be done at once. But thereat the Duchess rose to her feet with a terrible look. No, she cried, by the body of God. For it shall not be said that, after your excellency has chosen to deny every request I addressed to him, I owe his consent to the solicitation of another. The chaplain turned red, and the Duke yellow, and for a moment neither spoke. Then the Duke said, here are words enough, madam. Do you wish the relics brought up from the crypt? I wish nothing that I owe to another's intervention. Put the image in place then, says the Duke furiously, and handed her grace to a chair. She sat there, my grandmother said, straight as an arrow, her hands locked, her head high, her eyes on the Duke, while the statue was dragged to its place. Then she stood up and turned away. As she passed by Nensha, call me Antonio, she whispered. But before the words were out of her mouth the Duke stepped between them. Madam, says he, all smiles now, I have traveled straight from Rome, to bring you the sooner this proof of my esteem. I lay last night at Monsalus, and have been on the road since daybreak. Will you not invite me to supper? Surely, my lord, said the Duchess. It shall be laid in the dining parlor within the hour. Why not in your chamber and at once, madam? Since I believe it is your custom to sup there. In my chamber? Says the Duchess, in disorder. Have you anything against it? He asked. Assuredly not, sir, if you will give me time to prepare myself. I will wait in your cabinet, said the Duke. At that, said my grandmother, the Duchess gave one look, as the souls in hell may have looked, when the gates closed on our Lord. Then she called Nensha and passed to her chamber. What happened there my grandmother could never learn, but that the Duchess, in great haste, dressed herself with extraordinary splendor, powdering her hair with gold, painting her face and bosom, and covering herself with jewels till she shone like Our Lady of Loretto. And hardly were these preparations complete, when the Duke entered from the cabinet, followed by the servants carrying supper. Thereupon the Duchess dismissed Nensha, and what follows my grandmother learned from a pantry lad who brought up the dishes and waited in the cabinet, for only the Duke's body servant entered the bedchamber. Well, according to this boy, sir, who was looking and listening with his whole body, as it were, because he had never before been suffered so near the Duchess, it appears that the noble couple sat down in great good humor, the Duchess playfully reproving her husband for his long absence, while the Duke swore that to look so beautiful was the best way of punishing him. In this tone the talk continued. With such gay sallies on the part of the Duchess, such tender advances on the Duke's, that the lad declared they were for all the world like a pair of lovers courting on a summer's night in the vineyard. And so it went till the servant brought in the mulled wine. Ah, apostrophe the Duke was saying at that moment, this agreeable evening repays me for the many dull ones I have spent away from you. Nor do I remember to have enjoyed such laughter since the afternoon last year, when we drank chocolate in the gazebo with my cousin Ascanio. And that reminds me, apostrophe he said, is my cousin in good health? Apostrophe apostrophe, I have no reports of it, apostrophe says the Duchess. But your excellency should taste these figs stewed in Malmsey apostrophe, I am in the mood, to taste whatever you offer, apostrophe said he. And as she helped him to the figs he added, if my enjoyment were not complete as it is, I could almost wish my cousin Ascanio were with us. The fellow is rare good company at supper. What do you say, madam? I hear he's still in the country, shall we send for him to join us? Apostrophe apostrophe, ah, apostrophe said the Duchess, with a sigh and a languishing look, I see your excellency wearies of me already. Apostrophe apostrophe, aye, madam. Ascanio is a capital good fellow, but to my mind his chief merit at this moment is his absence. It inclines me so tenderly to him that, by God, I could empty a glass to his good health. Apostrophe apostrophe, with that the Duke caught up his goblet, and signed to the servant to fill the Duchess's. Here's to the cousin, apostrophe he cried, standing, who has the good taste to stay away when he's not wanted. I drink to his very long life and you, madam. Apostrophe apostrophe, at this the Duchess, who had sat staring at him with a changed face, rose also and lifted her glass to her lips. And I to his happy death, apostrophe says she in a wild voice, and as she spoke the empty goblet dropped from her hand, and she fell face down on the floor. The Duke shouted to her women, that as he had swooned, and they came and lifted her to the bed. She suffered horribly all night, Nensha said, twisting herself like a heretic at the stake, but without a word escaping her. The Duke watched by her, and toward daylight sent for the chaplain. But by this she was unconscious, and, her teeth being locked, our Lord's body could not be passed through them. The Duke announced to his relations that his lady had died, after partaking too freely of spiced wine and an omelette of carp's roe, at a supper as he had prepared in honor of his return, and the next year he brought home a new Duchess, who gave him a son and five daughters. The sky had turned to a steel gray, against which the villa stood out sallow and inscrutable. A wind strayed through the gardens, loosening here and there a yellow leaf from the sycamores, and the hills across the valley were purple as thunder clouds. And the statue, I asked. Ah, the statue. Well, sir, this is what my grandmother told me, here on this very bench where we're sitting. The poor child, who worshipped the Duchess as a girl of her years, will worship a beautiful, kind mistress. Spent a night of horror, you may fancy, shut out from her lady's room, hearing the cries that came from it, and seeing, as she crouched in her corner, the women rush to and fro with wild looks, the Duke's lean face in the door, and the chaplain skulking in the antechamber with his eyes on his breviary. No one minded her that night or the next morning, and toward dusk, when it became known the Duchess was no more, the poor girl felt the pious wish to say a prayer for her dead mistress. She crept to the chapel, and stole in unobserved. The place was empty and dim, but as she advanced she heard a low moaning, and coming in front of the statue she saw that its face, the day before so sweet and smiling, had the look on it, that you know, and the moaning seemed to come from its lips. My grandmother turned cold, but something, she said afterward, kept her from calling or shrieking out, and she turned and ran from the place. In the passage she fell in a swoon, and when she came to her senses, in her own chamber, she heard that the Duke had locked the chapel door, and forbidden any to set foot there. The place was never opened again till the Duke died, some 10 years later, and then it was that the other servants, going in with the new air, saw for the first time the horror that my grandmother had kept in her bosom. Dot dot. And the crypt? I asked. Has it never been opened? Heaven forbid, sir, cried the old man, crossing himself. Was it not the Duchess's express wish that the relics should not be disturbed? Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.